We're holding on Vogue on the days, four lines from the bottom. We started learning yesterday that we have in the Mishnah and the Chalokas between the Chachamim and Ben Beseda, whether if the Kmitzah was done in a way that's possible, whether that Kodmetz can be put back into the Keli and then the Kmitzah done again in a way that's kosher. The way the Mishnah had put it, it made it look like Ben Beseda is arguing only on the case where it was done with the left. But in all other cases, he would agree that you can't put it back. Ravin told us it's not so, that in fact, Ben Beseda would say his din in all cases. So we were discussing that. One thing we said, the last thing we said, was that we have two Tanoim, Rabbi Yossi ben Yassion, and Rabbi Yehuda HaNachton, who hold that even Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda is only going to allow it only if he didn't then put the kmitz into another kli shoris, which normally you're supposed to do. After you take the kmitz, you're supposed to take that kmitz, put it in another kli shoris to be mekadesh it, and then you go and offer it on the mizbeach. So they hold that if he hadn't yet put it in that second kli shoris, then fine, it's okay when one of the psulim did it, to then go put it back into the original keli with the rest of the mincha, and have a proper kohen take the kmitza again, and we're fine. But if you had put it into the second keli, then no. So you want to have two different versions of whether Rav agrees with them or disagrees with them, and holds like the Tanakama, who says that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda would allow it even if he was mekadesh at first. Even if he put it in that second keli already. So the Gemara says, Master thought of Nachman. So Nachman says, I have a question of that. We have to figure out, my Tosavri Hani Tanoi. What are these two Tanoi, Rabbi Yossi ben Yassion and Rabbi Yehuda Nachman, what exactly do they hold as far as Ben Beseda's opinion? If they hold that when the psulim did the kmitza, that can be considered an avoida, and therefore it's not, and therefore their kmitza is strong enough to make it possible, because after all they're a zar or an oinin or any of the other ones who pass all the avoida, then even if he didn't put it into the second keli yet, then it should be possible because they did the kmitza. The E kmitzah psulim laf avodah, and if their kmitzah is not considered an avodah, and we should ignore it, he over the matan kli may have us. What's the difference whether he puts it into the second keli? That shouldn't be any more effective than the actual kmitzah. So then, why can't we put it back and have a kohen start all over? Hodo amr of Nachman, but after Rav Nachman asking the question, then he says, the answer is, la'olam avoidah. We're going to answer that according to those two tanoim, the posel doing it is in fact considered an avoidah. V'la'igomra avoidasa, however, that avoidah is not complete. Ad'avon la'matam kli, until he puts it in the keli, only at that point does it become nikma, that now their kmitza has significance enough to passel the mincha altogether, and you can't even say that you're going to put the kohenitz back. But up until that point, yes, the kmitza was an avoda, but it's not considered a full-fledged avoda yet. Well, the Gemara asks, "Yichok yafilu loy kiddush?" Well, in that case, then even if so what should happen is then, so fine, if you're going to say that when the zor or oinin or whatever did the kmitza, you're going to say there was this considered an avoida, then what's going to happen? Even if he wasn't metabolish, even if he didn't put it in that second keli yet, what's going to happen? When he does go and put that kmitz back in its place, tikdosh, at that point, then he's in effect making it the kedusha of a kohenitz, because he's putting it into a kli shoris. Okay, the original kli shoris that it came from, who cares? Tosfos points out, you're not going to say that there's a matter of chatzitza, that it's not touching the bottom of the sides of the keli, because min b'mina in a chotzitz, the rest of what's in there is also, it's the same substance as the mincha, so it won't be a chatzitza, so then in effect, you're putting it in a kli shoris. Tikdosh, at that moment it'll become kodesh, the lifso, and then at that point it'll become posel. So what are you telling me? That according to those tanoim, you do the kohenitz out of the first kli shoris. At that point, it hasn't become kaddish yet. Now, only when you put it into a kli shoris is it going to become possible, to the extent where you can't be machshir if I'm putting it back. Well, then when you put it back in the same keli, then as well, you're going to, in effect, be doing that. And therefore, at that point, it becomes possible. You see from this, since we don't say that, kli shoris in mekadshin ella midas. Then we see that a kli shoris is mekadish only when you have das to that the keli should be mekadish it. If you just put it into the keli without that intention, then it's not going to be mekadish it. Now Tosfos points out there are other Gemaras, including later in our Masechta, that imply that no, that Klei Shor, that say that say that Klei Shor is on the Kaddish Shalom Adas. So Tosfos draws a distinction between whether it's something that was actually meant to that actually is kosher to be brought to the Korban versus not. Over here, after all, this kmitza is not kosher to be brought as a korban because it was the kmitza was done by a zor or one of the other psulim. So therefore, if you're going to put it in a klei shoras, only if you have intention to be mekadesh it is it going to be a problem, and otherwise not. Had it been a kosher kmitza, then in fact it would become kodesh when you put it in the second keli, even without that intention. So that's not a problem. You're putting it back into the original keli. You're not doing it in order to be mekadesh that kaimet. On the contrary, you're doing it in order to undo what the zor or the posel did, and therefore, according to Rabbi Yossi ben Yossi ben Yaskan, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Nachman, according to their understanding of Ben Beseira, is it's fine to do that. Well, the Gemara says homi das mekadeshin, so that would imply that if you put it in with das, it will be mekadesh. Even as Tosfos is saying, even if it is actually posel. The problem with that is v'habominei Rish Lakish from Rabbi Yochanan. So here Rabbi Yochanan is saying that, but we find that Rish Lakish asked Rabbi Yochanan klei shoras marshi kadosh psulin. Exactly that. Will a klei shoras be mekadosh something that's possible? For example, in our case where the kometz was taken by a zor, v'omalei and Rabbi Yochanan answers him ain mekadosh. It's not mekadosh at all. So it's not Makadish at all. So what are you telling me it will be Makadish provided that you have Das? Now we learned this concept in Zvachim, and we learned Rashi over the Tosfos over here, quotes Rashi and said over there that Rabbi Yochanan means that it's Makadish even to the extent where you can be makar of it at this point. It's true that it was done in a way that was possible, but now that you put it in a klei shoras, it's good enough to actually be Makadish. But now our Gemara seems to not fit with that. Interestingly, Tosfos brings the question from Rabbeinu Petter. Petter, the Pashtos, is the same as the English name Peter. So we see that at that time that was used as a Jewish name. There's a well-known thing that says there's some source, I don't know if it rises to the level of a medrash, that says that when Osir Ish came along and the Chachamim had reason to be concerned that his teachings are similar enough to Torah that it might mislead many Jews. So the story goes that the Sanhedrin sent a double agent to pretend to be one of them and wean them away from Yiddishkeit and convince them to alter their religion to not be so close to Yiddishkeit so that Jews won't be fooled. So he taught them, he came up with ideas, which of course they have in their religion as well, that there are reasons why they should be potter, why Christians should be potter with most of the mitzvahs. And therefore, this source goes that in token of that, they call them Petter from the Lashon Potter. So they have a different reason why he was called that, but whatever. Anyway, the point is, apparently in the times of Tosfos, enough people accepted that as a valid thing that they used the name Petter as a Jewish name. In any case, Tosfos goes on and discusses this whole point back and forth about, for one thing, a couple of achronim talk about there's a difference between blood and the koimetz. So first we have Rabbi Yochanan saying, according to the answer that we gave, that klei shoras are mekadesh only when something is possible, only ladas, only if you're actually intending to be mekadesh it. But then we have another statement of Rabbi Yochanan that they're not mekadesh at all. So the omelet ain't mekadesh. Rabbi Yochanan says they're not mekadesh. So what does it mean? Omelet. So he answers, I should talk about this, takes out those words, because there's not really an omale, there's not really pointy saying to pointy, where at the Gemara, some of the Gemara is asking how we reconcile these two understandings of Rabbi Yochanan. Anyway, ein mekadshin likrav. What it means is they're not going to be kosher to bring as a korban av mekadshin liposel, but they will be mekadshim to the extent where now they're posel, where now or the Makadosh them to the extent where now they're puzzle, where now, as we're saying, you can't put it back in the Kli Shoros according to the understanding of the two Tanoim in the name of Ben Besera, it won't be kosher to go and put it back into the original into the original Keli and start all over again. So that's one answer. Rab Amram says you don't even need to say that. You could say even that Kli Shoros on the Makadosh Shalevadas. And then we have the question, well, in that case, when we put back the claimants into the original Keli, won't it tassel it? Rabbi Amram says, here's a different answer. You can answer to that. Suppose that he put it into a Bisa, which is overflowing. Bisa is the name for the Keli into which they place a mincha and from which they do the kmitza of the mincha. So Rabbi Amram is saying, so suppose now you had a keli that was full and overflowing. Now when you put in the klimas and you're not putting it back into the keli, therefore it doesn't become kodesh. Rabbeinu Gershom points out as a practical matter, the only way that would work, where it's not going to be spilling out of a container, would be if it was a dry mincha, if it was a mincha soita. Because the regular minchas, given that contains oil as well, if it was heaped up above the top of the container, then it would flow out, and you wouldn't have a full yisarin anymore. And as we're going to learn later on in our pedic, you have to have a full yisarin, otherwise the mincha is bustled. Well, the Gemara asks if it's above the rim, how did he take the koimet from it in the first place? The koimet has to be taken from the flour that's inside the kevi, not above the rim. So fine. So rather, we're going to answer that he put it into a bisa which is slightly overflowing, but not slightly overflowing, but completely full, exactly full, but not overflowing. So now, fine. Then in that case, all the flour was inside the keli when he took the koimets. Then it was all inside the keli, but now when he puts back the koimets, we can say it's going above the rim because it's not going back into the same place it was. Well, the Gemara asks, well, why not? In the koimets, that's when he did the koimets, of it like guma, the pashtus, he made a hole in the flour from where he took the mincha. Kimahado legavei demana, and now when he puts back that wrongly taken koimets back into the keli. The key when he's returning it, Lagava de Monocomahadra, he's putting it back the pastures into that same hole. So back into the actual Kaby. So then in that case, then we're back to the same question, that it'll be Niskadish in that Kaby. If we're going to say, as we said, the first answer in the Kaddish and Elamid Das, then fine. It means he has no intention to be the Kaddish, but then we were discussing that point, whether in fact the Kaddish and the Das or not. But now, within Rav Amram's answer, what you're talking about, to begin with, the Keli was full. Okay, well, it was full to the rim. You took out a Kaimitz from that. Now you made a hole. Now you're putting it back into that same hole. So then you're back, it's back inside, it's back inside the Keli. The Chiddush of Rabbi Chosim Larash will point out that that we can't say that it means that a kosher koyin put it back in, because when the Mishnah says, when Ben Besera says zor shekomat, well, when he said the Braisa rather, that if a zor took the koyin, it's yaksi, we should put it back, that implies that he himself puts it back, not a koyin. And also because after all, the koyin would only be finishing off what the apostle had done, and therefore it still shouldn't work. So what good does it do that the keli was full to the rim in the first place? And the answer is Mikima Hadale Manachle Adachman de Mona, because what he does is when he puts back in the claimants, we're gonna say he doesn't actually put it back into the hole that he took it from. He's gonna put it on the side of the Keli, on the inside side of the Keli, umaininle, and then he's gonna shake the Keli, the Nachal Mimela, and then it'll of its own fall into that hole. So now, therefore, so it's not Makadish it when you put it back in that way. Nasa Kamisha Zira Koif, because it's the equivalent of a monkey or other non-human thing putting it back. So therefore that's how we'll work it then. So that permits, again, you got Zora took it, which was no good. Now according to Ben Besera, we have to put it back. But we have to put it back in such a way where putting it in that keli is not going to be Makadosh. So how do we do that? We make sure that it gets into the actual, it gets into the area below the rim, not directly by a human being putting it there, but rather indirectly by shaking it in there. So yes, Klai Shorta saying Makadshin Elami Shalomi Das, Shalomi Das, you don't need Das for it, but that means where he himself puts it in, even though he doesn't intend to be Makadosh, nevertheless he's still Makadosh. But here he didn't do that. Here it was only put in by the shaking, and therefore so it won't be Makadosh, and therefore we're fine. So the Gemara says, now let's discuss this point as well. Here's another way that we can look at it. Amalei Rav Yumi or Rav Zera. Rav Yumi asks Rav Zera, why do we need to go to such a doichet to say that we can find a way in which it's possible to put back the koymetz of Ben Bezera and not have it, and not have that Mekadosh it again? Why don't we say much more simply, why don't we just answer that he's talking about that he put back the koymetz into a keli that was on the ground, in other words, on the face of it. The keli has to be held by a koyin when the avodas are being done. So now we're going to say maybe that a kli shorus is makadosh only when you're actually holding it. So in that case, we have a very simple answer. El shmanina koyin the kli shal gavikata. Does this imply that in fact we could actually take the koyins in the first place from a keli that is on the ground? The Shita Mukovetzis points out, I mean, it is slightly different. Before, we were talking about putting back the koymetz in. Here, we're talking about putting the koymetz into a second keli. Here, Rabbi Yumi's question is about the actual kmita. But nevertheless, Rabbi Yumi figures the kal v'chomer, if you can't do kmita from a keli that's on the ground, then you certainly can't be mekadosh the koymetz into another keli, which is on the ground. Mephoshim talk about details within that point. But anyway, so Rabbi Yumi says, on the face of it, we have good reason to we should say that we can infer from this that it is in fact kosher to do the kmitza, and in this case the put of the kiddush of the kmitza in a keli that's on the ground. Otherwise, we would have used that as a much simpler answer and not had to go into all that doichet. So actually the Sefer Yoshev HaTov points out that actually we might say that only when the keli is already full with the rest of the mincha, then we can be mekadosh the koymetz in it. But if the keli is empty and you're putting the new koymetz into it, then that wouldn't work. So that would be the implication of Rabbi Yumi's question. Amalei, so Rabbi Zera says, you should know something. Karnagas bevoya di boyalon di boyalon. You should know, you're coming up with the same suffix that already we, the Amuroyim of our generation, of an earlier generation, have already come up with the same question. Rabbi Tommy Menachos de Rav Chista. As we find that Rabbi Zimi learned Menachos in the yeshiva of Rav Chista, and we're going to see, the Gemara is going to interject a second with something about that, and we're going to And discuss this point of whether you can do the kmitza or the kiddush of the koymetz in a keli that's on the ground. But before the Gemara gets to Ravimi's question, the Gemara interjects: Ravimi beit Rav Chista Tani. Are you telling me that Ravimi learned menachas by Rav Chista? On the contrary, Ravimi was not Rav Chista Talmud; he was his Rebbe. Now, of course, you know, here we said Rebbe Avimi, and here we're just saying Avimi, but the Gemara is obviously assuming that it's the same person. In fact, Shita Mukovetzis takes out the word Rebbe in the first place, so he was just called Avimi. The Pashtus, Avimi may have been his actual name, and he's one of those Chachamim who are just known by their name without a title, like Shmuel. The other possibility is maybe Avi is a title, is itself a title, and Mi would be his actual name. So we have Abashol or whatever. Anyway, so what are you telling me? Avimi learned in Rav Chista's yeshiva, learned menachas in Rav Chista's yeshiva. We find the other way around, that Avimi was Rav Chista's rebbe. Va'omer Rav Chista, we find that Rav Chista says in connection with a concept that's taught in Masechta Erchin. The Mishnah talks about over there that you can have a case where Beis Din has to supervise the selling of the property of Yesodim. So you have their father owed somebody money, and the debt has come due, and there are certain cases when the Yisomim are going to have to pay. You do have a concept called mitzvah Yisomim, the Yisomim have a mitzvah to pay off their father's debts, and there are going to be certain cases where the land that they inherited from their father is going to have to be sold in payment of that debt. So in that case, then the Mishnah says over there that the Beis Din has to make a public announcement, to make a public sale of the property. They have to announce it for 30 days. So that way, in other words, hopefully they can bid up the price, and that way the Yisomim will get more for it, and then that way it benefits them. But Rav Chista says, Kofi Tovi Bani Mehavimi, I absorbed many, many good blows from Avimi. In other words, Avimi, Yusuf Avimi was hitting me, or actually Rashi uses the expression, the printed Rashi in front of us uses the expression, Menada Oisai, like he was putting him in Nidri. But on the side over here it says different possibilities, Mavaza Oisai or Maka Oisai. In any case, that kofi means blows, so therefore we mean that he's actually hitting him with blows, good blows, effective blows, bali me avimi, I absorbed from avimi. In other words, when he was teaching me, and he was the Rebbe, I was the Talmud, he was sometimes hitting me, Allah de Hoshmaita, regarding this teaching, which I wasn't getting it. Nowadays, you think about it, you know, a Rebbe would do that kind of thing to Talmidim, and the next thing you know, CPS is being called, but, you know, obviously the Talmidim there were made of sterner stuff, and that's how they became Rav Chista, and, yeah. Anyway, so the Mishnah says over there that the Mishnah says over there that you have to announce it for 30 days consecutively, but the Avimi had made a statement that that actually it's 60 days. So what do you mean? Is it 60 days or 30? And Avimi explains it's both. Balahach is with Sukhin. If Beis Din is going to announce it every single day, Shloshim Yom, then 30 days is enough. Sheni v'chamishi v'sheni, but if they're only announcing it on Mondays and Thursdays, which is the time, as we know, when the people come in from the villages into the towns, then Shishim Yom, then you're doing it spread out over a total of 60 days. What you do actually only have then 18 announcements, because you have during 60 days, you have 18 Mondays and Thursdays. And again, the idea is to bid up the price. So now what happened was Rav Chista is reminiscing when he was in Yeshiva or in Cheder, whenever it was that Avimi was teaching him, then he couldn't get this, so he wouldn't accept that as a valid answer. The Mishnah says 30 days is 30 days, but he's only 60 days. And Avimi would hit him in order to drive home the lesson. And now, years later, Rav Chista is praising that it was a correct answer, and Avimi was right And Avimi was there's different views, stories in Rashi, what exactly was going on, but if Chista was forgetting it, and Avimi would have to hit him to get him to remember, whatever the case, years later, now Avimi, years later, Rav Chista is reminiscing and saying, you know, Avimi beat me good for not absorbing or not remembering or not accepting this answer. Anyway, the point is, Avimi, therefore, we see was Rav Chista's Rebbe. What is he doing learning in Rav Chista's Yeshiva? The answer is Avimi Masech Deis Is Akoreis Akelei. What happened was Avimi had forgotten Masech de Menachos. V'Asa Kamed Rav Chista Lad Kuri Gemare. So now he came to Rav Chista to re-remember what he had learned. So that's what he's doing as a Talmud in Rav Chista's Beis Medrash. The Gemara asks for Lishlach Lev Leis Gabei. Well, then he should ask Rav Chista to come to him and remind him, why is he coming to Rav Chista's Beis Medrash? And the answer is Savar. Avimi figured Chochmistaya Milsa Tvei. This way, I will get greater help Minashamayim to remember my learning. Yogaiti Yomotzasi Talmud. So if I put in more effort into the learning, more effort to walking, to the traveling, to Rav Chista's Beis Medrash, then I'll be helped more Minashamayim to be able to remember my learning. That's one way of understanding it. Another point is also that the embarrassment of it, that he should have to go to his former Talmud and one that he beat yet, and go ask him to teach him. So he's willing to set aside his covered and learn from his former Talmud and not be embarrassed about that. So therefore he figured he'll break his midas, and that way he figured I'll be more effective at him being able to remember. Anyway, so that explains what happened. Avimi was in fact originally Rav Chista's Rebbe, but now he became Rav Chista's Talmud as a result of having forgotten his learning. In any case, now getting back to that, says Zera tells Rav Yemiya, your question about whether you can be Makadish from a klisha, whether you can be Makadish the Mincha, or take the koi, whether you can take the koimets from a keli that's on the ground, is exactly the same question as Avimi had. Because the Gemara says, Pogabir of Nachman, now when Avimi had been learning in Rav Chista's yeshiva, and now when he was leaving over there, Pogabir of Nachman, one day Rav Nachman met up with him, Amalei Ketzed Koinson, and he asked Avimi, how exactly do you do the Koinons? Amalei, so Avimi says, Avimi points to a keli that happens to be lying on the ground, and he says, Meklizeh. From this keli, in other words, not that this keli is obviously not a kli shoris, but in other words, had this keli been a kli shoris, it would have been suitable for knitzah, even though it's on the ground. Now Tosfos points out further on, this, as we go through the sugya, we're going to talk about that it's not necessarily kosher to do it from a keli on the ground. It may be required. The Gemara is going to bring a possibility that maybe a kohen has to lift it up. Well, if that's the case, then what's Avimi's chiddush? And the Tosfos says that even first of all, we can say this keli, in other words, it's a metal keli. You don't need meshicha, you don't need to anoint it or anything. As soon as you use it for the avodah, it becomes a kli shoris. Or it may have been a wooden keli, and you have an opinion, which we're going to have later on in our Masechta, of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, that kli shoris can be made out of wood, and therefore Avimi's chiddush would have been that you can use that for a kli shoris, even though it's made out of wood. But again, if we assume that you could take from a keli that's on the ground, So actually, Avimi himself is going to say soon that you can't necessarily, but wait. So he says you could take it from this keli. So on the face of it, that means this keli as it is on the ground. Amalei, said Rav Nachman, says v'chi klinsim meklisha al gabi karka. Can you in fact take the knitzah from a keli that's on the ground? Amalei, so Avimi says no. I don't mean that. To magvalei koyin. I mean that a koyin would pick it up. And again, the chiddush would be that, even if it wasn't anointed with shemen amishcha, or even if it was a wooden keli, then it would still, then it would still be good. Chiddush shemamichasam Rashba has a different explanation of the question and the answer. Rav Nachman says to Avimi, can you teach me how exactly we do the kmitzah, which we're going to learn later on Daf Yud Aleph, the mechanics of how kmitzah is done. So Avimi points to a keli over there and says, you know what, if there was a keli here that had flour in it, I would be able to show you. Rav Nachman says, yeah, but it's a keli on the ground, how would you be able to? And Avimi says, if somebody were to pick it up, then I would be, and it had flour in it, then I would be able to show you. So Avimi is saying, in fact, a kohen has to lift it up. So Rav Nachman asks, Ketzin Mekadshin Asam Nochos, so how do you make them mincha, which is to say the koimetz, kodesh afterwards. In fact, Shitun Chavetz says that instead of the word menachos, the word should be koimetz, as a mincha, or it should be as a koimetz. So how you makadish the koimetz after it was taken out? So again, Avimi says you could conceivably you could put it into this keli that's lying on the ground in front of us. Again, the question is, can you mekadesh in a keli that's on the ground? So again, Avimi says, you have to be talking about that a koyin lifts it up. So Rav Nachman says, how does that work? That would come out, anytime you're doing knitzah of a mincha, you would need three koyinim, one to hold the keli in his hand, a second one to hold the keli into which you're going to put the koimetz, because again, the koimetz has to be put into another keli. If you're telling us, Avimi, that neither one of those can be on the ground, you need two koyinim for that. And then you need a koyin for the actual knitzah, because the knitzah has to be done with the right hand and the holding of the keli. We have to, the holding of each koyin who's holding the keli would also have to be holding it in his right hand, because it's an avoda, and an avoda can't be done with the left hand. Actually, Shitim Kubetis points out that really, in fact, conceivably, you could still do two. So you would have one koyin picks up the keli, and then one koyin picks up a keli, another one does the kmitza, then the one who did the kmitza, and then the one who was holding the one with the mincha will then put down that one, pick up the other keli, and the koyin who did the kmitza will put the koyinets into it. Are you going to tell me that you need three people to do the kmitza? Amalei, Avimi says, so what's the problem? We're tehei tzricha shloish osa, the tamid. So what? Let it require 13 koyinim, just like the avoda of the tamid requires multiple koyinim. But Rav Hamras Melech. So who cares whether it takes, how many koyinim it takes? Eisvei, but Rav Nachman says that it doesn't really work. We learn in a Mishnah later in our parak, Zahaklal, the general rule, kolak koyimetz, anyone who does the kimbu, we're going to talk about there about the dinim of tegel, Sazaf, or Kolak Komet, the Nosin Bakli, Hamolach Vahamakter, any of these four avodas, the Kmitza, the putting in the Keli, the walking it to the Mizbeach, and the burning it, which, as we discussed before, those correspond to the four main avodas of an animal korban. So all of those, Lechel, Rabash, about the Lechel, if he's doing any of those avodas, having in mind that he's going to eat the part that is meant to be eaten, namely the Shirayim, he has in mind chutz the makomo or chutz the zmane, then it'll be possible or kigul respectively, as the Mishnah goes on to say over there. So in other words, the same dealing with kigul that we learned about as far as animal korbanos also apply to menachos. Now the Mishnah does not mention the kohen who lifts up the keli, but according to you, Avini, that's an essential part of the avoda. It should be listed. So in other words, it's true, with an animal korban, you really need only four avodas, but with a mincha, in effect, you should need five, because you have, there's the kmitza, there's the holding up the keli into which the kmitza, from which the kmitza is going to be done, there's the holding up the keli into which the komitz is going to be placed, which, fine, that'll correspond to kabbalah. When it comes to kabbalah, also a kohen has to be holding the keli, but fine, the point is, in other words, when it comes to shechita of an animal, nobody needs to be holding the animal, whereas here we're saying, that we should need to hold on to the keli with the mincha when we're taking the kohen. So in effect, you should have five avodas, and it should mention all those. So Avini answers no, because Tana Seder Avodas knock it the Seder Koyanim. No, because the answer is that Tana is only mentioning the Seder of the Avodas. He's not going into how many Koyanim are needed for each one. He doesn't need to get into the fact that there are multiple Koyanim that need to be done be doing one Avoda. So in other words, yes, the keli does have to be picked up, and without that, the kmitza and the placing of the kmitza and the koimitz and the keli is going to be possible. But the mission is not getting into that level of details, just describing the four avodas, and we're meant to understand that some of those avodas are going to have subparts to them. That's the point of Rashi. I mean, Gershom actually says that it's not an avoda at all. You do need to do it, but nevertheless, it's not an avoda during which a thought of pigul would pass all the curving. Okay. So the Maskana, therefore, so Avini is saying you do need to lift up the keli. So therefore, so going back to Reb Zera says to Reb Yimya, when you ask, can you take the koimet from a keli that's on the ground? And if you can, then why don't we use that as a simpler answer before when we were asking how we can find, according to Ben Beseder, that you put back the claimant, then that will depend, according to Avimi, that in fact would not work, and you do have to take it from a cave that's being held by a claimant. Okay, well, continuing that discussion, the Gemara says, Bo minei midin of Sheshes, they ask Rav Sheshes the same question. Can you take the claimant from a cave that's standing on the ground? Amalei. So Rav Sheshes answers, Omalahu would probably be because they asked him, but whatever, he says to them, Puk chozi my avdim lagav, ma avdim lagav, go out and see what they're doing in the inside, in the heichel, not go see, literally, Rav Sheshes is living a couple hundred years after the Churban, and he's in Babel, but he means, in other words, if you analyze it, you'll find that what they did in the heichel, which will answer when it comes to the lechem upon him, where you'll have the answer. The Mishnah says later in our Masechta, when it comes to the Lachem Aponim, every Shabbos they would swap out the Lachem Aponim, they'd take out the old and put in the new, and so you have as follows, Abar Koinim Nechnosin, four Koinim would go in for the Savoida, Shnayim B'yadim Shnei Sedarim, two of them are holding the two stacks of Lachem Aponim, so each one is holding one stack, or Shnayim B'yadim Shnei Bozichin, and then another two are each holding a spoonful of Lavoina. The way it worked with the Lachem Aponim, as we'll learn later on in the Masechta, is you had the two stacks of Lachem Aponim, and with each stack you had a spoonful of Lavoina. They were placed on the Shulchan on Shabbos, they remained on the Shulchan for the whole week until the following Shabbos. The following Shabbos they would take off the old Lachem Aponim and the Bezichin, burn the contents of the Bezichin and the Mizdeach, and distribute the Lachem Aponim among the Kohenim to eat. And meanwhile, they would put on new Lachem Aponim, and the cycle repeats. So you have four Kohenim going in with the new Lachem Aponim and the Bezichin, one Kohen with one sack of Lachem Aponim, a second with the other, one with one Bezich, the other with the other Bezich. and Barbom Makadim Lifneim, then you would have four other Kohenim who go in ahead of them. Shnayim Little Shnei Sedarim, two of them are going to be taking off the two old stacks of the old Lachem upon him, or Shnayim Little Shnei Bazichin, and two of them are going to be going in to take off the two Bazichin of Levana. So altogether, you have eight Kohenim involved in the replacement of Lachem upon him. Now, says Rav Sheshes, V'ilamak B'yas HaShulchan L'Kotoni. Now, you notice there's no ninth Kohen that's mentioned that has to lift up the Shulchan. If you're going to tell me that you can't... Now, Bazichin, the Bazichins of the Lachem, have the same relationship to the Lachem upon him as the Koimetz does to the Mincha, the same way as the Mincha. You do the Kmitza, and then that Koimetz is burnt on the Mizbeach, and now the rest of the Mincha becomes Mutter for the Kohenim to eat. It's exactly the same with the Lachem upon him and the Bazichin. You burn the Levona that's in the Bazichin on the Mizbeach, and now the Lachem upon him are Mutter, and they distribute it among the Kohenim and they eat it. Now, if you're going to tell me you can't do Kmitza from a keli on the ground, then by the same token, you wouldn't be able to take off the Bazichin from a Shulchan that's sitting on the ground. So you would have to have somebody lift it. And the fact is, the Mishnah is saying only that you only have eight Kohenim involved. And you can't say, like Avimi said before, that the Mishnah is not addressing the number of Kohenim. You can say that when we're talking about the Avodas, in which it can become Piggle. Because then, fine, we're not listing how many Kohenim are needed for each one of them. But here, the Mishnah is explicitly saying that that's the Gemara is going to ask that in a minute. But the Gemara at this point is assuming that it should, in fact, tell us that there's a Kohen to lift up the Shulchan as well. And the fact that you don't means that you can do it from the ground. So the Gemara says, why? What's the problem? Lav Amatosam say to Avodas Nachka. Didn't Avimi just say that it's only going according to the order of the Avodas? It's not getting into the number of Kohenim. Hachanami say to Avodas Nachka. So you could say over here, the Mishnah is only focusing on the order of the Avodas, the fact that you have the avoda of putting on the new lachem upon him and putting on the new bazichin and taking off the old ones. It's not necessarily talking about other prerequisites such as having to lift up the. Rashi says the expression, even if you do have to lift it up, it's not the avoda chashuv. See, it's not an important avoda. Again, according to Rabbeinu Gershom, we would say it's not really an avoda at all. But according to Rashi, even we say fine, it's part of the avoda, but it's not an important avoda. Dummy, how do you compare that? Because when it comes to Piggle, it's not getting into the number of Koyanim at all, it's just getting into the number of Avodas. So when in the case before, when we said about the four Avodas in which it can become Piggle, so fine, there we can answer some of those Avodas and involve multiple Koyanim, but we're not bothering to get into that. Hocha, but over here in the Mishnah in the Mishnah later in the Masechta, Nachas the Minyan of the Kohenim. The fact is, it is getting into the number because it's saying four Kohenim who put in the new ones and four who take out the old ones. In Issa, if in fact it was so that you need to also lift up the Shulchan, listening Magbia, then it should also mention that there's a ninth Kohen who has to lift up the Shulchan. Ella, so obviously the answer is Shmamina Kohenim Miklish Al Gabe Karka. Obviously, therefore, the answer is that you could take the Kohenim from a keli that's on the ground. You do not have to have a Kohen lift it. And the Gemara says, you're right, Shmamina, that is a solid proof. So not like Avimi said that you need that a Kohen would need to lift it up. Rather, the halacha is that in fact you could. Okay. Now that we've established that, then the Gemara continues on in that vein. Amar Rava. So Rava starts off with the following statement. Shittily, it's obvious to me that Kodinson Mekleshar Gabekata, that he could take the claimants from a keli that's on the ground, Shekhen Matsinim Basilik Bazichin, because we just said, Rav Sheshes is proof that we see that when the Bazichin are removed from the Shulchan, which is the equivalent of taking the claimants from Mincha, then it works even if the Shulchan is still standing on the ground. So that part is obvious. Furthermore, says Rava Makadshin, Mincha Beklisha Agame Karka. Furthermore, we can say that you can be Makadish, a Mincha putting into the Keli, into the Plisharis, and that works even if the Keli is on the ground. Shekhen Matsinu Basidu Bazichin, because you have the other way around, when you're first putting the Bazichin on the Shulchan with the new Lachem upon him. So again, the Bazichin are, so now you're putting the Lachem upon him together with the Bazichin, which is the equivalent of an entire Mincha, and you're putting it on the Shulchan, which is standing on the ground. So therefore we see that kind of thing will work as well. And they go together. Tosfos points out over here actually that the Gemara is going to discuss later on an opinion that says that, that each one, that neither one is Kaddish without the other one. But there's different other opinions about it. Maybe you don't need both of them to be on the Shulchan. Maybe as soon as you put the Levonah in the Bezichin, then immediately it becomes Kaddish. And as far as the bread also, maybe it becomes Kaddish when it's baked in the oven before you even put it on the Shulchan. They only become one complete mincha only when they're placed on the shulchan. So we see that you can put the bezichin on the shulchan and together with the lapa lapanim, they become a complete mincha, and that's valid even though the shulchan is standing on the ground. Now that we know those two facts, though, Boy Rava, Rava's question is, Kiddush Koimetz Mai. What about placing the Koimetz into a second Kli Shardis? What would be the din? Mimincha Yafin Amah. Do we learn it from the Mincha, and therefore it would be fine? And therefore it would be fine, even if it's on the ground. Now Rashi points out we can't answer that we do anything with the bezichin of putting it into something that's on the ground, because we don't. We take the bezichin off the shulchan, we immediately take them to the derech achitzin to be burned. We don't put them on the ground. We don't put them on anything that's standing on the ground any time in between. So do we learn it from the mincha and therefore it would be fine? Or do we learn it from the blood of the korban, where if the blood is caught in a keli, which is on the ground, then it's no good. It actually has to be held by a kohen. So now the Kiddush Koimetz, the placing it into the second Kli Shardis, is the equivalent of the Kabbalah Sadam. So then we have that in terms of the Dinim of Pigul. So we should learn from the blood, and therefore it won't work unless the Kohen is holding the Kali. Hodr Pashta, later on Rava answered the question, Midam Yafinama, as a matter of fact, we do learn it from the case of the blood, and that would mean, in other words, that a Kohen has to actually be holding the keli into which the koimetz is placed. So it's fine to do the kmitza from a keli on the ground. Like we said, you can take the bezichin off the shulchan when the shulchan is on the ground. But when you're putting the but in the case of the bezichin, you're not putting them into another kli shardis. When it comes to a regular koimetz, which has to be placed into a second keli, then you actually have to have that second keli has to be held by a kohen. So the Gemara says, "Umi Amar Rava Hachi." Did Rava indeed say that? Va'itmar. But we have a discussion. Koimetz shechilke b'shnei kelim. Suppose that the kohen did the kmitza, but then he took the koimetz, the flour, and placed it into two separate kelim. So half of the koimetz in each one. So Rav Nachman Amar in a kodesh, Rava Amar kodesh. Rav Nachman says that's no good. That koimetz will not become kodesh, thereby you have to have the whole koimetz together. Rava says it will be. The im isa. Now, if Rava says that you learn from Kabbalah Sadam, leilach midam, then we should learn from the blood, and we should say that it doesn't work either. The same way as with blood, it's not kosher if you receive not enough of it in one keli and not enough in another keli. So then in that case, you have to have enough blood in the keli to be able to do the sprinklings or applications or whatever of blood that you need to, then you need to have enough of that in the keli in the first place. So Rava should be learning from that. Why is he saying in the case of the koimetz, where half a koimetz is not enough to burn on the mizbeach, why would it work according to him? There's discussion among the Mephoroshim about the exact comparison. Can we Makadish it if it's only half at a time versus can we use it if it's only half at a time, etc. So the Gemara says, Hodebe Rava Me'ati. As a matter of fact, Rava changed his mind and agreed with Rav Nachman. Tosfos points out, Rav Nachman is Rava's Rebbe. So he ended up agreeing with Rav Nachman, his Rebbe, that in fact it won't work if he divided the koimetz into two separate kelim. So therefore, so, uh, And in fact, the Ramaphosa will explain that also, the Lacham Mishnah and the Rambam explains that also, it can't mean that Rava changed his mind and said you can't be Makadish the Mincha and Keli on the ground, because in fact, a different Gemara says that we do in fact learn it from Kabbalah Saddam. So the only thing we can say that we learn, so what we learned from then is not that it can be in a Keli on the ground, because it's clear that it can't, but rather that you can't do, that you can't divide it into two Keli. So therefore, so Rava is being consistent after all, that we learn the whole concept of Kiddush Kometz from Kabbalah Saddam, and therefore it has to be an Akedah that's being held by them. Okay. So the Gemara says, V'dom menolam b'le kodesh ha-chatzayin. In turn, where do we know with the blood, where if you catch only half of the amount you need in Akedah, then it's not Makadish? And the answer is the Tani of Tachlif of our Shol. The Tachlif of our Shol, Torah B'raisa, as far as the Mechatas, as far as Parah Adrumah water. Kiddush pochas mekidei hazal b'klizeh. If he was mekadesh, he puts the water on the ashes. If he does less than the amount, pochas mekidei hazal b'klizeh, less than the amount that you need for hazal in one keli, the amount you need for hazal we talked about in Zvachim is enough to be able to dip the ends of the ezov, which is needed for sprinkling. You have to have enough water there to dip the end of the ezov in and be able to sprinkle it. So if you have less than that in one keli, or pachas mekidei hazal b'klizeh, and a lesser amount than that amount in another keli, loy kiddush, then he's not mekadesh. We learned, by the way, in Zvachim, we talked about that, we talk about when it comes to the sprinkling, do you need a minimum amount, or is it just the fact that even a molecule of it fell on the person is enough? But as far as kiddush, as far as making the water kiddush in the first place by putting in the ashes, for that, for sure, you need a minimum shear in the keli. So if you did that, like Kiddush, then Tachlif of our Shol teaches a Braisa, then it won't work, you're not Makadish the water. The boiler will be done by, now the question then became, what about as far as blood of Korbanus would be the same thing. Now, let's say, for example, we're not talking about Chachatas Chitzona, let's say, where Chachatas Chitzona, even though you have four applications of blood that need to be done in the Mizbeach, as we learned in Zvachim, if you did only one, then we have the Korban is kosher. Rather, we're talking about Chatois HaPnimius, where you have a large number of sprinklings that have to be done, and therefore the question would be whether if you have less than that, whether it's Kodesh if you have less than that in the Kaby. So Rashi explains over here that the same question would be as far as the Asham Metzora, where you also need enough to apply to the Metzora's ear, thumb, and toe. But Shittim Kubetzis doesn't like that, because the fact is that the din that we're talking about over there is in fact only about the Hatoris Pnimius and not about other Korbanis. There's discussion about that point, whether which Korbanis exactly it would apply to. In any case, the question is, would the same din apply as far as blood? So let's say, for example, with the Chatas HaPnimis. So suppose, for example, let's say the Par Helam Dava Shal Tzibur. You need seven sprinklings of blood. What if he received in one keli enough blood for three of them, and in the other one enough for four? Can he now combine the contents of the kelim together, and it'll work? Or does it have to be that to begin with he received enough blood in the one keli for seven sprinklings? So the question would be, Hilchsehi, do we say that the matter with Mechatos, that you need a certain minimum amount in the Keli, is a Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai, or Mehilchse Lo Yafinan, and we have a rule that you can't learn from Halachas L'Moshe Mitzinai to anything else, you can't use any of the Yud Gimel Midas Shatur and the Dreshos Behem on Halachas L'Moshe Mitzinai. In other words, Rashi elsewhere explains that the reason is Halacha Moshe Mitzinai, by definition, is part of Torah Shabbat Peh. The Yud Gimel Midos are meant to be applied only to Torah Shabbat Chsav. So in that case, then maybe that din would apply only to the Mechatas and nothing else. Oid Yoma, Hosam, my timer. Or maybe there was a reason based on a pasuk for why enough water has to be in the keli at the time of kiddush for it to work. We would say dichtiv, because the pasuk says the tovah b'mayim, you should dip the ezev into the water. B'mayim implies in the water described before that you're going to be using to dip in and then to sprinkle. So then hachanami hakziv the tovah b'dam. Here also it says you should dip his finger in the blood, implying that there should be the same amount of blood that he received in the first place. V'itmar, and it was said to answer the question, Amr Rav Zirka, Amr Rav Elazar, after Dam Kiddush. As a matter of fact, With blood also, it won't be Mekadosh. He has to have all the amount of blood in the one Keli at the one time. So that's how we know that with blood, you have to have all of it in the Keli at the one time. And therefore, so now, Rava was saying before Rava had thought to say that with a Mincha should be different, but now we're saying that no, in the end, when it comes to the Kiddush Koimetz, when it comes to placing the Koimetz in the Keli, you have exactly the same rule, and you have to have enough blood, and you have to have enough, and you have to have the entire claimants in the KV at once, and not like he had argued with Reb Nachman before and said that it would still be kosher. So Amar Rava Tani Nami Hachi. In fact, Rava says we learn a brisa to that effect. Because the brisa says Bifnei Koyin Miniyah, he places the water in front of the Koyin. These words, because Hazevach takes them out, and there are different Shittim Chubetzah says instead it should be, instead of Bifnei Koyin Maniach, it should be V'Omar Rava Tanya V'Tovah. That Rava says, we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk is V'Tovah, he should dip the Ezer, that means, or for that matter, when he dips his finger into the blood to sprinkle, V'Tovah, he has to dip it, V'Loy Mesafeg, not that he wipes his finger along the side of the Keli and collects the blood. It has to be that he has to dip it into the blood that's at the bottom of the Keli. Badam, when it says in the blood, Shehei Badam, Shiur Tvila Me'ikre, means there has to be enough blood to toggle his finger in to begin with. So again, not that you combine it together from two Kalim. Because, as we just said, Min Adam should be Inyan, because the word Min Adam means from the blood that was mentioned in this connection. So we see from this braisa also that you need to have kedei hazar in the keli in the first place, and that applies equally well to parah duma water and to blood for karbonis, which requires sprinkling. And the Gemara points out that itzdrich l'michta v'tovah v'itzdrich l'michta v'dan. You should realize that actually the pasuk does need to say both these phrases. The Tovol and Badon, both of them seem to be saying the same thing, that you need enough blood to be able to dip in, and that you need, and not to wipe from the side of the Keli. But you need both. The Ikos Rahman of a Tovol, if the Torah had said only the word Tovol, have Amin Afagatla Kibble, Shir Trilis. Even if he didn't receive in one Keli the amount that's needed for all the Trilis, Dahainu Hazar Shavapamin, namely to sprinkle the seven times, the Ikre to begin with, as long as at the time of the Hazar, there's enough, so the Hachilah received three in one, four in the other, then he mixed them together, then that would be good enough, because after all, you have, now he can dip his finger in. No, the Torah says in the blood, implying the blood that was there all along. But if the Torah said only the word badam, have aminafilim asapig, then you would think that it means even if he wipes his finger along the side of the keli, it's good enough. He can collect the blood that way. Therefore, no, the Torah writes for tavol to say that he needs to turn on it. Okay. Now, we said in the Braisa, min adam shebe inyan, we said from the blood that's mentioned in this context. So, l'mu'utimai, as opposed to what? What blood are we saying cannot be sprinkled? So we learned this in Zvachim as well. So Rava says that means as opposed to the leftover blood that's on his finger. Every time he would have to wipe off his finger before he does the next sprinkling. Implying that every time he dips his finger into the blood and does another sprinkling. So the Gemara says Messiah Rabbi Elazar. This supports what Rabbi Elazar says. The Amar Shiraim Shabbat Shulin, where Rabbi Elazar says exactly that what's left over on the finger is possible for the next Hazar. So the Gemara says Amar Leirovin Barav Abel Rava Ami Talmidach. So Rovin Barav Abel tells Rava, you should know your Talmidim are saying Amar of Amram, that Rabbi Amram had said Tanya. We learn a similar kind. We learn something that seems to contradict that from a case that we learned about. A case we talked about in Zvachim, where blood of a chatas splashes onto clothing, and as we learned there, it has to be washed in the azara. But the Braisa says Hoyim Mazeh. If the Kohen was sprinkling one of these chatoris apnemius, the nitzah hazar miyadei, and the blood that he was sprinkling squirted off his finger. So does and gets on a beged. Does he have to wash it in the azara? Imach lehiza tone kibbles. If he did it before he sprinkled, then that clothing requires to be washed in the azara. Misha hiza. But if he did it after the sprinkling, ain't tone kibbles, then he does not need to do kibbles because this blood is not roy for sprinkling anymore. My lav. Now, when the Braise says, actually, he's a Mishahiza, my love, actually, Gomer has also, doesn't it mean that the actually, he's a means before he finished all the Hazois, so he's still in the middle of them, so the blood that he still has is kosher for the rest of the Hazois, and therefore, and the rule we learned in Zvachim is whenever the blood is usable for Hazar, then if it gets on clothing, it has to be washed. And what would it mean? What would it mean? Mishahiza would mean after he finished all the hazaras. Only then, if the remainder of the blood gets on the clothing, does he not need to wash it in the hazara? That would imply that the leftover blood on the finger after one sprinkling is kosher for the next sprinkling, because that's what the braisa would be implying. That even though, so he did, let's say, three sprinklings, now he has blood on his finger after the third sprinkling. If some of that blood gets onto clothing, then he's going to have to wash that clothing in the azara. So not like he was telling me that blood is posel for azar. And Rava answers, Loi. What the braisa means, actually hiza and mishahiza, means actually yotzim yode hazar, before the hazar left his finger, the tone kibbutz, then it would require to be washed in the azara. Mishayotza hazar miyade, but once it left his finger, the nitzim imachin nishar, and then what was left on his finger gets on the clothing. Ein tone kibbutz, then it wouldn't require kibbutz, precisely because those shidaim are not usable for hazar. So that doesn't contradict. On the contrary, the braisa has to be explained to mean that anything that's on his finger after each individual hazar is possible for the next hazar, and therefore, if any of that blood gets on clothing, then it doesn't require kibbutz. Okay, the Gemara says, Eisra Abaya, Abaya says to Rava, in connection with the Par Adruma, part of the procedure of the Par Adruma is after it's shechted, the Kohen takes the blood of the Par Adruma and sprinkles it seven times toward the Heichel. He's standing on Harazesim east of Yerushalayim. So Gomer Melahazis, now the Mishnah describes there, after he finished the sprinklings, he would wipe his hand on the body of the Parah, because he needs to make sure that all the blood that's left over is going to be burnt together with the part adroma. Gomer A, now that implies only after he finishes all the hazaris, loy gomer loy, but as long as he didn't finish the hazaris, he doesn't do that. So then you see that the shiraim on his finger are kosher for the next hazar. Therefore, he can dip his finger once, do the seven hazaris, and then afterwards he'll wipe off his hand. So Rava says, no, that's not what it means. Gomer mekaneach yadai. When he's finished all the hazois, then he wipes his hand, because again, you want whatever blood is left on his hand to be burnt together with the para. Loi gomer, but when he didn't finish, when he's between hazois, mekaneach etzboi, then he wipes only his finger, because precisely that, he can't use the leftover blood on his finger for the next hazois, so he needs to wipe it off before he does the next one. Well, we want to ask, you know, how does he do that? Bishlam, Gomer, Mekaneach, Yodav, Gufa, Shalpara. When he finishes all the hazois, he wipes his hand on the body of the para. We know why. Dichtiv, Vesara, Chazapara, Lainav. So then the pasuk says he should burn the para adroma in his presence. And therefore that means that Rashi understands that it means that actually that he would actually go away from the area where the Parah Adruma is, and he would sprinkle the blood, and then he would come back to where the Parah Adruma is and finish it, and start burning it. Tosfos argues with that here, and we also learned in Zvachim that no, what it means is that, what does he mean? Is he going back and forth and back and forth? No, there's no reason to assume that. And every time the Gemara is assuming he'd have to wipe it on the Parah Adruma, it wouldn't work. So Tosfos quotes that Rashi had mentioned in Zvachim a different reason. You can't say that he would wipe his hand on the parah between every sprinkling, because then his hand would get hairs from the parah and dirt and whatever on it, and it wouldn't be a chatzitza. So that's the question. So when he finishes and he wipes his hand on the parah, because Vesarov is a parah layinav. So now he's going back to where the parah adoma is, and now he can wipe his hand there. Ela loy gomer, but if you're telling me that even when he didn't finish mekaneach etzboi, he's wiping his finger between one hazar and the next, but my mekaneach, what is he wiping it with? Di amet begufa shel parah, if you're going to say he wipes it on the body of the parah, ibo lo mis mekaneach yodav etzboi begufa shel parah, then it should say, And he wipes his hand and his finger on the body of the parah. Since it doesn't say that, that would imply that it doesn't require him to wipe that off. That whole part is in parenthesis over here. And in fact, a number of Mephoshim, and in fact, Birkas HaZevach and Shittim Kubetzes and other Mephoshim, take it out. We didn't have it in Zvachim either. So it's a marginal note that was incorporated into the Gemara. But rather, the question is, according to Rashi, the question is, what is he going to go back and forth every time between the Parah Aduma and where he's sprinkling? And according to Tosfos, no, there's no going back and forth. But the question is, how can he wipe it in between on the Parah Aduma? Then his finger is going to get hair and dirt on it, and it's going to be a chatzitza. So if you're telling me he has to wipe his finger between one hazar and the next, how is he doing that? I'm going to buy this fast mizra. So Abaye says he's going to wipe it on the corner of the, on the edge of the mizra. As we find that the Mizrachim are called in the Pasuk Kfode Zahav, where Kfode comes from word, that means wiping, and it's so called because in general, whenever they did avodas involving blood, the Kohen, involving dipping the finger in, the Kohen would wipe his finger between one Hazar and the next on the edge of the Mizrach, and therefore they came to be called Kfode. Remember the different Zvachim we talked about a little bit, that the Rambam seems to say, that there was no klisharis involved, that all the blood of the parah aduma is all received in the kohen's hand, and in that case, what mizrach are we talking about? And we talked about that maybe there is a mizrach there, maybe you're not required to have one there for the Kabbalah, but nevertheless, in practice, there would be one there. In any case, that's what he does. In fact, the Rambam also, when he deals with these halachas, he actually says that he wipes his hand each time on the parah, and then he wipes his hands on the parah again. And the Rambam says, wait a minute, you were saying over here that you don't, that he doesn't wipe it, that he doesn't wipe his finger each time on the parah. So the Kesef Mishnah, in fact, explains over there that the Gemara, when it mentions a Mizrach over here, is thinking that the blood is received in a Mizrach the same as any Korban. But now, in the end, we're saying that you don't. You just receive the blood by hand, so therefore there's no Mizrach available there to wipe his hand on, and therefore, of necessity, he wipes it on the Parah Aduma. And then, in fact, the Shittim Kubetzes brings a different gears that the Rama must have had over here, which again amounts to saying that there wasn't necessarily a mizrach there. He does, in fact, wipe his hand on the parah each time. Okay, so then in that case, he'll have to wipe his finger on something to get off the hairs and whatnot before he does the next hazah. So therefore, that establishes the point, therefore, that when it comes to blood, in fact, it is possible to use the blood from one dipping for the next hazar, for a hazar after the next one, each time you dip and do the hazar separately. And then when we're saying the same thing as who is for, and we're saying the same thing is, but the point is that also you have to have enough blood there in the first place to be able to dip his finger in each time, and from that we learn to the mincha that the same thing when it comes to the koimah to the mincha, also you have to put it all in one keli at one turn. So we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and the Gemara is going to continue discussing this matter of the koimah being split up among different kelim.